Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Oh, Jill, I'm so excited for today's conversation. How are you doing?
Me too. No, I have to say that I have loved seeing my book from your eyes, because it's so interesting to write my story and see my story, but I love all the perspective that you have and like what you pulled out is significant to you, because it's things that I would never necessarily have guessed. So I'm super excited for today.
Oh, yay. Well, that's why I think it's such an important book, right? Like our stories, I think there's so many people who don't want to tell their stories because they think it doesn't matter.
And I still fall into that category. I mean, really, I was like, why would anyone else read this book? But yeah, thank you for bringing to light why.
I think it's the myth of the ideal. Like a lot of times we think if we can't, like there's this belief that nobody wants to see us in the messy middle. Like, so we have to give somebody a rule book. This is how you come out. And I promise you, if you follow these 7 steps, your coming out journey will be beautiful and everybody
Perfect.
Will support you. Yes. So we kind of think nobody cares unless we can give them the perfect model. But I actually, what most of us need in this life is to see that our imperfection fits somewhere.
Right. And you nailed it right there, because honestly, the reason why I wrote this book was not because I was like, wow, I have such a fabulous story. I need to share it. It's because I felt so freaking alone in the coming out process. And we had Untamed from Glennon Doyle that talked a lot about, you know, breaking free from that societal conditioning. And obviously in the book, she talks about leaving her marriage to her husband and finding Abby Wambach and marrying. But for me, it didn't go into the levels of actually coming out and how messy that is. And so really my book is a whole lot of mess. Of the mess that I went through, because I knew that there were other people going through that were feeling very alone in that. And so I wanted them to see like, no, you're not, we're all trudging through the mud here or the wet sand. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, we were talking last week a little bit more. We've kind of talked a lot about the supposed to mountain in the past couple of episodes, but since our last episode, I had a really interesting conversation with one of my students that even though it's definitely not a coming out story, it was a really good example to me of what it looks like to take the rules and the rigidity off of people. Because a lot of times I think, especially we were talking about how parents can spew their hopes and dreams on their children. We talked about that a little bit in episode 2. So I was having this conversation and I have these discussion posts that my students have to write. And there's 25 students in my class and every week they have to write 3 discussion post conversations. So there's 2 students that put up a question and then they facilitate this full week of discussion. And in the end, there's like 75 posts that happen because every student has to do 3. They have to read each other's and respond to each other's. And I've kind of been feeling bad because it feels to me like a lot of work. And I was talking to one of my students and she said, well, first of all, I want you to know that from my perspective, it doesn't feel like a lot of work, but I can also tell you that we have a group chat and everybody in the class likes these. And we feel like we've gotten to know each other so well. And we're just having really, really valuable and important conversations. And she said, but I think it's because you've created a safe space for us. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting because it's an online class. And she said, yeah, but every week you send us an announcement that's really positive and uplifting. And she said, and every single week you remind us to let it be easy. to not overcomplicate the assignments, to not overthink, you know, the rubrics and the expectations. And I said, well, I think you guys are being so funny because I would expect these to be really short posts because there's so many. But these are like long, thought out, amazing, intimate posts. Mm-hmm. She said, because you've lifted all the rules.
Mm.
Most professors say it has to be under 250 words. You have to use the right formatting, blah, 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 blah. And all I have said is they have to be meaningful and respectful conversations. And you have to keep the conversation going. That's the three rules: meaningful, kind, respectful, and keep it going.
Mm.
And she said, and so by doing that and reminding us every week to let it be easy, we share things that we don't normally share. And I've been thinking a lot about this conversation with her because I feel like that's life.
Yeah.
Like when we know that we're walking into a space where the people are just going to love us, there's just going to be meaningful connection, kindness, and respect. Don't you show your very brightest and best side in those environments?
Oh, yeah.
Versus where you think you might be judged and ridiculed and shamed for who you are?
Absolutely. But also, I think, and this just popped into my head, I think it's interesting how when the other professors try and control the outcome, so they're saying what has to be produced, whereas you're offering support and guidance to the process. You are encouraging process. They are driving towards result.
Ah, I love that.
I know. I'm like, where the heck did that idea just come from? But yeah,
you're right.
You share your story though. And we do this so much. Like we value the end product sometimes more so than the process, where the process is really where the beautiful stuff comes out. And I'm a total, you know, it's a little hypocritical to me to be like, well, this is how we should be doing it. Because even in my own book, I tried to very much control my coming out process and how it would impact other people and put certain parameters around myself of, well, this is how I have to come out, or this is what I'm allowed to feel, instead of just, let's see where this goes. Let's explore this a little bit more. Let's share this piece and just sit in that for a second and see how it feels.
You know, I do love that. Actually, I love that analogy. Because you're right. Because the other thing that has happened for me as a result is I don't have to grade these discussion boards. I gave them a paradigm. So I said, you get 5 points per week if you do all three posts. You get 3 points if you do two. You get 1 point if you do one post. So that's all I have to do. All I have to do is count. How many times did you show up and do your discussion post? But I don't have to check for commas and periods and
the stuff that really matters.
Yeah, I'm not checking for spelling or anything. I'm just, did you show up?
Yeah.
But because of that, they feel more free to write without limits. And I feel more free to just enjoy the posts, which is probably one of the reasons I'm enjoying them so much. Because I don't have to grade them.
Yeah.
And I, again, kind of going to your point, that concept of coming out, you know, were you trying to come out in such a way that the people maybe around you would grade you as a successful coming out person?
Oh, yes. I was still going to be perfect in my coming out process.
Yes.
Yeah. I have if I could share a quote from the book.
Yes.
There's one point where I said, I was scared to attach any negativity to my coming out experience. I felt that if I could stay happy in it, then others would naturally have to be happy for me. I rationalized that if I had any negative feelings, then I was signaling to myself and others that acknowledging my queerness was not actually something I wanted. I thought that if I wanted to be loved and accepted, I had to be the most loving and accepting of myself. I didn't want the dark cloud of trauma to mask my new rainbow life. You know, which is great in all that, yes, I wanted to be the most loving and accepting of myself, but you can't also force that. And I was very much trying to force what I would allow myself to feel. In some ways, I was almost masking myself in a certain way of coming out, of like, look at, this is what coming out looks like.
That's like telling the caterpillar that they can't actually break the chrysalis on their way out of the chrysalis. Otherwise, they can't become a butterfly.
Yeah.
You're a less than butterfly if you broke through your chrysalis.
Yes. Yeah, it's...
Or telling the newborn child that they can't be covered in slime.
It was a challenging part of the process because I think, like your students, I craved just having spaces where I could just say all the things.
Yeah.
That I didn't have to put on the happy face of like, yep, I'm coming out and it's all great. Look how together I am. Like, it wasn't until I found people that I could be safe with and that I could crumble around that I could start rebuilding my life.
You know that. So again, I'm going to tie it to my students because one of the girls that I was chatting with a couple of days ago, she said, well, first of all, I just want to thank you for sending, I sent an announcement. And she said, first of all, I want to thank you for sending the announcements. You're really clear. You're concise. You tell us exactly what is due that week. So she said, there's never any confusion as to what is expected of us, which I think is an interesting concept considering like we've been talking about this supposed to mountain of the expectations. But the thing that she caveated that with is that I always, first of all, I remind them, like I said, to let it be easy. I remind them, I give them some sort of a quote about what it means to be human. So don't judge yourself too harshly. If you miss an assignment this week, there's always next week, but never spend more time beating yourself up than you need to. So I kind of am always sending them that kind of a message. And she said, and just that, just knowing that you are seeing us as humans gives us permission to explore things that we wouldn't normally explore. And I feel like that's exactly what you're saying. I actually am not taking any expectations off of my students. I'm actually a really, it's not hard to pass my class, but you have a lot of work to do to pass my class, if that makes sense. So it's not that I have an easy class. It's not that I don't give any homework or exams or anything, but it's that I have definitely learned how to create a safe space around falling.
Mm.
And if you're going to fall, we have a plan to recover that fall.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the feedbacks that as a professor, I get all the time. And I'm thinking around all of the stories that I've ever heard of. And I'll be honest, I probably know more youth coming out stories than I know late in adult life coming out stories. But almost all of the stories that I know from the youth perspective, the coming out journey is never clean. But if they have a supportive other, it's healthier.
Oh, definitely.
I hate the word easier, but it's easy. Like I tell my students, let this be easy. And when I say that, it's not trying to tell them it's not going to be complicated, but don't overcomplicate it. Don't over-worry about it. There's enough of a challenge to coming out. You don't need to overcomplicate anything by worrying about what everybody around, by trying to control everybody else's experience of your coming out. That's like not even your worry.
Right. And so one thing that's kind of related to that, and that I hear from people, again, who have come out later in life, is that there is a guilt when they just let everything come out, when they stop controlling, because we're so used to trying to control a lot of aspects of our life and how people perceive us and even control our own feelings of what we're allowed to have. And so I hear a lot of people struggling with the fact that, like, you know, I'm happy that I came out, but I'm heartbroken right now. Like, I'm happy that I get to live this new life and I am grieving the life that I'm leaving behind. And it's a very unusual thing that I never anticipated in the coming out process that there would be such a range of emotions that would come out.
So we talk, you and me talk a lot about the messy middle.
Yeah.
And I agree that that's a place, but for just a second, I actually want to clean that up for our listeners, for you, for me, for really everybody in the world, if that's possible. Viktor Frankl is the one who gets the most credit for this quote, but he has the way the quote is phrased is something like, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space, we have choice. What we do with that choice makes all the difference for the rest of our lives. But I've been thinking a lot about that quote the past couple of weeks. I went to lunch with a friend about a week and a half ago, and I was just having one of those low days. This divorce is kind of what you said. It's taking a toll on my emotional experience in ways that I didn't expect it to at this stage in the game. And she said, Trisha, you're in the liminal space right now. And I came home and I thought about that in regards to that Viktor Frankl quote. And I thought, you know, there is a space between stimulus and response, between coming out and the life that we're going to live, between divorce and the life that we're moving into. Like, there is a space between one lived experience and the next lived experience. And if we can actually slow that space down, if we can pause and just be in that space without judgment, without fear, without hurrying it, without anything, just pause in that space, I think that's where we learn so much about who we are. So can you make that space sacred? That's the question I've been asking myself late this past week. What if I just let this be a sacred space? If I don't have to have any answers? What if I don't have to make this easier for my children? What if I don't have to explain my tears to my therapist anymore? Like, what if I just sit here and pause?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's such a good point, because we talk about, you know, forward motion and taking, even if it's little steps, just keep moving forward. But really, you do need to rest on the journey, and that's needed. It's part of it.
Nature rests. It's called winter.
Yeah.
Like, nature rests.
Yeah.
Why do we expect us to not?
Right. I think you had said in one of our other podcast episodes, you're like, nothing grows all the time. And I was like, you're darn right. Yes, exactly. Why are we are so growth focused, but all around us are examples of like, nope, this is where we go inward. Nope, this is where we pause. And we do need that too.
The wisdom of Mother Earth has given us a sample of what it means to live. And humans have said, F you.
Right.
What do you know? You've only been around for millennia.
Right. In so many different ways. So kind of along those lines, I guess I was always really scared to attach the concept or idea of trauma to coming out. And so I kind of wanted to ask you, like, what are, you know, I had people who have said like, oh, everything is a trauma nowadays, and people don't know what real trauma is. And they made those comments, you know, kind of not saying it directly that my coming out experience wasn't trauma, but kind of like, this, you're making this to be a bigger thing than it is. But really, there were so many different mental things and even physical things that I experienced through the process of coming out. So I just want to get your thoughts on, is coming out trauma? What is trauma? Like,
so in research, one of the things that I love is there is a very clear distinction between what counts as a stress, what counts as a crisis, and what counts as a trauma. And I agree. In our world, we use the word stress for all of it. And then we don't use the word trauma unless it's something huge, like a war. Like, we don't even give credit for an earthquake to be a trauma. Like, really, in the social landscape, it's kind of socially accepted that a trauma must be something big. But a trauma is anything that halts your trajectory of life. And what makes it a significant trauma is the concept of too much happening too fast with too few resources. So anything could be, I mean, I've heard some people even say birth is a trauma because it completely changes the aspect of your trajectory of life. You walk into the hospital, a woman who does not have anybody else to care for. You come out of the hospital with this little thing that has changed your body forever.
That's the truth.
Forever. And if you don't believe that, then you've not ever delivered a baby at all. but that's kind of the concept of trauma. But trauma really does, trauma is anything that changes. Like, it's like you're traveling along and then you hit a hole, a sinkhole that is the size of the Grand Canyon. You can't go on. And it becomes a trauma, like I said, when there's too much of it, too fast, with too few resources. And resources count as money, time, community, energy, food.
Okay.
I feel like there's six and I only named five, but those are our basic resources.
So coming out can be a trauma, but the size of the trauma or the level of the trauma, I guess, may really vary.
Yes.
Based on what kind of tools and support you do have out there. And yes. Also what other factors are involved. It's like, so for me with my coming out, it wasn't just coming out. It was also the fact that then I had to go through a divorce, that I also had to figure out my financial life because we ran a small business together, that I also had to figure out what would happen with my children because they were homeschooled. There were a lot of different aspects. And then I didn't even have the religious layer on top of that.
So that's the too much.
Yeah.
Aspect. It was a lot. So there was a lot of that. And depending on, so some people, when they come out, they might have to look at their relationship with their parents, their relationship with their siblings, their relationship with their church. But then if you think about it, like in your situation, and there's no hierarchy. So I'm going to say right now, I do not believe that there is a hierarchy of trauma. Every single one of us experiences life so uniquely different that what is a trauma to me may not be a trauma to you.
Mm.
And it's really important that we understand that. I actually don't like it even when people call it big T and little T trauma.
Mm.
Because again, it puts a hierarchy to it. We can't do that. We cannot do that. But if you're like, let's say you're a 16-year-old kid and you come out to your mom, she automatically tells your dad, they disown you and kick you out. Your siblings have been forbidden from talking to you and you don't know anybody else who will support you. So you are now homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So not only was it too much, but the changes came too fast.
Yeah.
One day I was safe and now I don't have a house. I don't have money. I don't have food. I don't have access to school. I don't have access to work because now I don't have a car.
Right.
So it's like, it's the snowball effect.
Right. And I think that the statistic is something like 40% of our homeless youth are LGBTQ. So this is a lot more significant and regular occurrence than some people may realize. And just for coming out, for being who you are. But yeah, it can have various cascading effects on so many different areas of life. And that's why too, I know it's cliche or maybe it's been overused at this point, but the concept of like coming out is not as easy as opening the closet door. It's not I was straight, now I'm gay. The effects of it are huge. And I think that's one other point I wanted to make in the book. It's just that that's why it's not easy. That's why it took me, oh gosh, decades, to really get to the point where I could even feel like I had the space and tools and resources I needed to be able to come out.
Well, I'm even thinking of your story a little bit, but I can see it in so many people. But like you said, yeah, it's not like you all of a sudden walk out of the closet and everybody knows and everybody's okay with it. And you've just changed your pronouns and that's it. Now it's done.
The process still continues. My family members and I, my friends and I still continue to have great and challenging conversations. When I think about a lot of the backlash towards the LGBTQ community right now, I think at the root of it for a lot of parents, we talk about a lot of like parental rights and education and how to keep queerness or trans or non-binary identity out of our schools. But at the root of it, I think it's because parents, or at least what I have heard from people who have come to me and said, Jill, how am I supposed to explain that to my child?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, to me, I'm like, isn't this exhibit A of why we need more education and conversations around the queer identity and the trans identity? Because we don't even have the words to explain it when we don't understand it. And so instead, the result is like, we're just going to push that away like it's not a thing instead of learning how to create that bridge.
But again, it's the only reason creating the bridge is hard is because we're trying to control the outcome of the people who are going to get there.
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense? The only reason this is a hard conversation to have with our children is because so many people are trying to control for the fact that if I teach my children to recognize a girl kissing a girl or a girl marrying a girl, mm-hmm. if I let my child see that, then I'm going to teach them to be a lesbian. I don't want to teach them to be a lesbian. So therefore, I'm scared of what the outcome of this is. So yes, right. let's tuck this under the table.
Yeah,
we're all so busy controlling for other people's outcomes that nobody is just letting themselves live.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it goes back to, you know, when I mentioned in the book that my mom said to me, I would never want a gay child. And it's not that she, I think it's one of those things, it's a very sensitive point when she and I talk about it right now, because she knows, and I know in her heart, that there was no negative intention, that she wouldn't have said those words if she thought at all that I or my siblings could be gay. For her, it was the point of like, being gay is harder, and I don't want life to be harder for my kids. And I feel like there are a lot of parents in that boat, that if their kids could just be cisgender, or if their kids could just be heterosexual, it's easier for the kids. It's easier to parent them.
So see, I'm going back to my students though. And I'm mm-hmm. being a grad, like I'm going to just put it all in this perspective of my student. Being a doc student is hard. There's a lot expected of you. Chances are you also have a job and a family. I know it's hard. So I remind my students, let this be easy.
Yeah.
It is hard. So let it be as easy as possible, but I'm not going to put restraints on you because I want you to think through this. Yeah. And then I have students who end up showing me more. So in like in your mom's situation, being gay is hard. I don't want anything to be hard on my family.
Yeah.
But by not wanting it to be hard, we actually make it more challenging. By not wanting our kids to be confused by seeing same-sex representation in videos and in TV and in books, we're actually making it more complicated for them as they have to sort through their feelings in their own mind.
Yeah.
Our children are going to be in the process no matter what, right? They're going to come out or not.
Right.
It's not whether or not we can protect them from the challenges of life. It's whether or not they know that there's somebody willing to walk the challenge with them.
Right. And the thing is, you know, the gay agenda that we hear so much about, there is no agenda to turn a heterosexual child to convince them that they're gay. It's just for all children to be able to find themselves in society. And so those queer kids that we know exist, because they grow up to be queer adults, that they can see themselves as well and not go through the decades of confusion and untangling that I do in my own story. I mean, my greatest hope is that my book is completely obsolete in a few, you know, in the next decade or two decades, that people don't need a book like this because they know more of what their options are, or they can see themselves in the fabric of society.
It's why, I mean, you've heard me share this statistic before. It's why so many of our LGBTQ youth who are Mormon die by suicide in April and October, because it's when our church holds general conference, and it's when the standards and the expectations and the rule systems are just vomited for a full weekend onto families, and it's streamed everywhere. An all day Saturday and all day Sunday, all these kids hear is how bad and unacceptable they are. It's why in the LDS world, it's our biggest two weekends for death by suicide.
Oh my gosh, it just breaks my heart.
There's not a whole lot of statistics that tell us that when a child sees a girl kiss a girl on an animated TV show, that they go home and die by suicide. We have a lot of statistics on the other side.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm so excited that you shared yourself, your stories, your book.
I'm so excited. Perfectly queer. It's almost here.
Woohoo!
So let's cheer. Yeah.
I did just cheer. And last time I cheered for our audience and I listened to myself cheer, I went, ooh, that was loud. And here I did it again.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't quite have, we're not the huge budget production yet with the sound engineer helping us. So anyways, bear with us, folks, as we cheer along through the podcast. But I'm glad we could end on a cheer, because this was, trauma is always going to be a harder, heavier episode. And I think it's great that we had the conversation. But I'm really excited because in our next conversation, I would like to talk a little bit more about when you make it to the other side of coming out.
I'm excited.
All right. Thanks, Trisha.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, US podcast listeners, we want to come to you. If you're interested in having a perfectly queer book event with me, Jillian Abbey, and Dr. Trisha, email us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com or DM us on our social media accounts and let us know where you're at in the US. We would love to coordinate and connect with you, to meet you in person, and we appreciate your support. Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.